4-year release in L.A., yeah.
Okay, very good.
Well, I definitely want to start with this whole kind of book that was originally done, Follies de Django. This came through a publisher, right? Your publisher, Antoine Caro, got it?
Yes.
How did you get connected to it? How did this whole thing get connected?
Oh, you know, I was looking for to make a film, the first film, about a musician, you know, and a specific thing is I wanted to make a film about a musician in a period of time very complicated, where, you know, things are becoming very chaotic around him, and with a hard time, you know, and to see how, you know, when you are an artist or a musician, how you survive with this. And in fact, there's a different way I approach this subject, because my dad was also you know, very jazz fan, and was listening to Django when I was young with him, because he was, you know, it was, for him it was a very important character. And at the same time, one of my best friends, Antoine Caro, was a very famous editor here in Robert Laffont, and he told me, you know, I got a book, just making a book about Django and his entire life. And I wrote a book, and in fact, the film is not, you know, a complete adaptation of the book, because there's only one chapter was talking about this period of war, this period of time during the war. And when I read that, I remember the very strong, position of Django at this time, and it was for me exactly the theme and the topic I wanted to make as a film, because in the life of Django there was exactly this topic I wanted to make about a musician in a hard time, you know. So it's different reasons came to this subject for me, and so I took the book also, because the author of the book, Tisatko, was he had many information about Django Reinhardt, and he had made some documents. So we worked together. I wrote the script, and he was helping me, because he never made one before, but I wanted to make that like this. So yes, you know, it's the real thing is about talk about the musician during a period of time very complicated. So it was the topic I wanted to make, because you know, I made some music, and you know, when I started to work on the development of this project, you know, it was a hard time in France. You know, there was many attentats, many, you know, and many of my friends as artists, you know, I know, not only movie makers, but also musicians, also we were wondering what's going to happen, you know, how are we continuing to make our own art in this, you know, atmosphere. And so it was kind of there was a lot of resonance, you know, to make this kind of story in the modern area.
You know, I'm curious then, because you also, I know, got to chat with Django's grandson David, who obviously wasn't alive during this. You know, when you're telling this story, what did his influence add to the film?
He was not alive, yeah, because in fact, the film, where the boy who will be born at the end, you know, is the father of David.
Yeah, exactly. How did
David turn up?
How did David help impact the film, though? What did he add to it, getting to see him?
It was very nice, because after that, when I started to work on the script, my only concern also was to talk about the family, to talk to the family, because it was impossible to make the film without the family, mainly regarding the music, mainly regarding the right of the music. So I met him, and he was not surprised that somebody wants to make a film about Django Reinhardt, because there were many projects about Django, and Americans won, you know. Frank Marshall, the director, Woody Allen wanted to make one. You know, there are, since maybe 30 years, many projects have been, you know, developed but never made. So he was not surprised, but he was very surprised the choice of this period, the choice of these 2 years during the war, because it's not a very well-known story. But he was first, he listened to me, and he was, but you will not make a film when Django was young and his, caravan was burning, or when he met Duke Ellington after the war. I say no, because I think, you know, the tragedy of the gypsies is very linked with the story of Django. You know, when you hear his music, you know, when we hear the tragedy of the, when you understand the tragedy of the gypsies in Europe during this period, the both things are very linked. And he was absolutely fine of this idea. He was absolutely, surprised, but after that, completely amazed and okay to do it. And also because, you know, this Requiem at the end, which was a very unknown story and was very important for Django Reinhardt. And people of his family knew that, because for him, he wanted to be considered not only as a gypsy guitarist, but as a real musician. And for him to make something like Requiem, he was very appreciated. You know, many great musicians like Bach, like Bartok, like Debussy, and for him to make this kind of music was a complete change and was very important. And David knew that, but he told me yes. So for him, it was a concretization of this very good idea. So we worked together a bit. He read the script, and we had many chats, because, you know, there's not a lot of material on Django Reinhardt regarding books, regarding no personal matter, because he didn't write, so there was no letters, no personal, you know, documents on him. But in his family, there were many, you know, little anecdotes, little stories that he heard at this period through his father, through his grandfather. So he gave me a lot of emotion and context about what was the painful and the difficulties for Django at this time.
You know, one of the things... Oh, definitely. You know, one of the things that, Etienne, I love about the film and a side of Django we get to see is his connections with his family. In particular, I think his mother's character is so dynamic. Can you talk specifically, though, about the women in his life at this time? I think we get a glimpse of his wife, of obviously Luis's mistress, and of course his mom, but talk to me a bit about that side of the film.
Like many genius, you know, and I think he was one, as a musician, and you know, they are surrounded by women. I mean, women are very important in life of genius. Sometimes you don't see them because they are, you know, supporting a lot. But for him, for example, you know, even if you can think he's a little bit macho and a little bit, tough guy, in fact, all the women around him were deciding for him, and they were deciding, and it also what tells us this story. The guy, even if he's a lead, I mean, women are, you know, his mistress ask him to go away in Switzerland, his wife accept, and she organized this, and his mother was also the very important person, because she was managing him a lot, you know, when he was a child, when he was a young adult, and then after also, she was a very tough woman. So I wanted to show that you know, this guy was also, you know, surrounded by women, and they were very important for him in his life. And this wonderful actress called Bimba Meerstein, you know, it was very important for me to work with this film with real gypsies. I mean, people who are musicians and were coming from this community. And I made a casting, you know, for all the gypsies in the film, in the east of France, near Strasbourg, because there are still many of them here, and they are no more, you know, traveling. They are sedentarized. And Ono Winterstein, the guitarist who is in the film, Sanson Schmidt, the son of a great musician, and they are all musicians also. And so I asked them to play in the film. So they are in the film, and this woman is extraordinary. She is 87 years old, and she was exactly. She is exactly like what the mother of Django was, because she was a singer and a dancer, and the mother of Django was a singer and a dancer, exactly like her, and she has exactly the same kind of character, very protective, very but also very strong character, you know. And the incredible thing that this woman, Bimbam Merstein, is playing in the character, you know, she was 12 years old during the war. And she, all her family has been deported and killed in different camps in Germany, from France, and so she, for her it was very important to be part, because it's a kind of testimony for his community, for her community to you know, to talk about what happened at this time. And she during the shooting she was telling a lot of things about what, you know, what souvenir she had and what things also. So it was she's absolutely, she's like a queen, you know. Even in her community, she is a very important woman, because she's old, but she had the memories of all that. And you know, in the gypsies tradition, because there's people don't know, many gypsies don't know how to write, the fact that you have the souvenir and etc. are very important. And this lady, because she's really a lady, is this kind of woman.
You know, Etienne, one of the elements I loved about the film was the way you and your DP, Chris, lit the film, both.
Okay.
Yeah. How your lighting in particular, not only inside in the different venues, but the way you shot the outside, the woods, and I know we don't get a scene with the caravan fire, obviously that was in his youth, but you utilize fire as well in this movie so predominantly. We see it throughout, and then there's obviously the epic fire near the end that can you talk about the visual style that you were looking for?
It was really the idea just to not to show the you know, like the souvenir of this burning in the caravan of his hand, but when you have the fire of Germans, and that when he sees his caravan burning, you can imagine, you know, that for him it's a very, very hard souvenir, because it's also a souvenir of what's happened in his life when he was, you know, much younger, 18 years old. So, yes, you know, the DP, it's very important when you make a first film to have a very good connection with your DP. And Christophe Bocan is one of the great, you know, European DP here, major DP. And we had a wonderful collaboration, and we had, you know, all the idea I explained to him was absolutely, he was convinced, and he helped me a lot to make this, you know, kind of photography. The very important thing for me was to have, because the film is really in two parts. This first part in Paris, where you have a lot of on interiors, and we know with domination of red, the color of the fire, the red, the yellows, the orange, and then when you go to Tonon-les-Bains, you're much more in exterior, and the color are quite different, because there were two elements very important in the life of Django. There was first the fire, because in the gypsy the fire is very important, and in his life also, and also the water. He was really he appreciated a lot the you know fishing, the water, and the sound of the water, etc. For him, it was kind of a relieving, relaxing sound and atmosphere that he loved, you know, because ditches are very close to nature. So for me, the second part was much more something when he came back to his origin, family, friends, but also, you know, origin of the voyage and the trip for gypsies. So, yes, you know, we've tried to work on those elements like fire, rain, snow, smog, which are very, you know, the constitutive element of Earth, which, yeah, we've tried that. I hope, I'm very happy that you saw that and you understand that, because it was very important for me to, you know, there are a few references for me, for my film, which are sometime old one and sometime new one, but one of the old reference was, you know, this absolutely wonderful I love called Johnny Guitar, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know for sure Johnny Guitar the Western.
Mm-hmm.
In this Western you have all like that, all the elements like fire, you know, the air, and the colors are very linked with this atmosphere, you know. And we work with this with Kitsaboka. It was very important for me.
You brought up Requiem and how David really was, I think maybe that was one of the reasons why he wanted you to make this film or you know, gave the rights to this.
Johnny Guitar, of course, is Nicolas Frey. Huh? Nicolas
yeah.
I
would love to talk about
Requiem,
working with Requiem, because I know, you know, with your lead actor, he so dived into the music. It took him a long time to kind of study and get the guitar, but did he not also bring along Warren Ellis, who kind of helped this whole thing come to fruition for Requiem?
Warren Ellis?
Warren Ellis?
What is the question exactly? Yes?
Yeah, well, can you talk about creating, you know, what... Because we don't have much from Requiem. I mean, we have so much of Django's material, but...
No. So, exactly. The idea, because there's, you know, not a lot of thing on the Requiem. We have just, you know, few notes. In fact, when you start the Requiem at the end, you have the introduction, the organ introduction. That's the only notes that we have from the Requiem. We have a transcription, but this is the only, you know, it's 20 seconds. Mm. But we don't have anything after that. And I've asked David Reynard if he agrees that we start with from those 20 seconds, and to ask to a composer, a musician, to make and to imagine what could be the following, and so I met Warren Ellis. Reda knew him, and I loved his score before, you know, The Assassination of Jesse James or Tom and Sheria or, you know, Film in France, and we met, and I was looking for somebody, in fact, who was not, you know, who was a little bit like Django when he created Requiem, because Warren is not, you know, a symphonic composer. He don't know exactly how to compose, like, you know, or to write music, like, you know. He's exactly in the same position when Django, you know, was creating this. And in fact, I asked him if he wanted to make, and he was absolutely happy and really excited to do that. So he imagined something, he created new melody and new things, and it's an interpretation, because for sure Django had not made exactly the same thing. I mean, jungle would had made something maybe more, you know, chaotic, more dysphonic, more, you know, but, you know, we don't care. I mean, the important thing is that he recreates something, Warren, and he worked a little bit with an arranger, how you say, you know, somebody who helped him to create the structure of the thing, but all the ideas came from him, and the only thing I told him that it was very important for me to respect the fact that we knew that when Django made it, there were organ, chords, and strings. So I told him, please work with those elements. No, not others, not you know, or other kind of instruments. And I told him also that was one of my ideas to make this chorus in Romanian, you know, to make it in the own language of the people from Gypsies, you know. So yes, it was very interesting to do, and I was very, you know, scared when I told David it's finished, can you hear, and what do you think about it, because, and it was absolutely you know, smash, and he was crying a lot, you know, because also the lyrics are in Romania, and for them it's very strong, you know. And this idea came because Django was very sad that there was no, you know, requiem in Romania for funerals, you know, for funerals for gypsy people. When gypsy people are, you know, are in church and they're dying before him, and very often when there is music, there is no music with Romanian lyrics, and so that's why we put that in this composition.
Well, Etienne, I enjoyed the film. I loved the film, but I was especially blown away by Requiem and how you merged it with the photos. And I love the ending to this film. I got teary-eyed myself, especially when I saw his mother and she was crying. But
thank you. Thank you very much.
I really enjoyed the film, and I appreciate the conversation. And thank you for the time so much, Etienne.
It's for DVD